I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview. We have with us Nancy Graydon, who is an herbalist. She is a farmer, so she grows her own herbs. She is right here in Amory, so she's part of the Hungry Turtle Farmers Cooperative. And she is the owner-operator of Red Clover Herbal Apothecary Farm. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Sylvia. Good morning, Bob.
It's so good to have you across the desk, as I said, because I've been trying to get you on this show for the past year.
You have.
But she's so busy. There's such a demand, not only because of what labor her own work requires, but there's a growing interest, it seems to me, in herbalism, isn't there? Is that something that you've noticed, Nancy?
No, there is. And I think since the 60s, it's been growing. But if you look at the food cooperatives in the city, the health and wellness section, they do a really nice profit. People are really interested in finding more natural, less invasive ways to keep their body well and to heal.
Wow. And now, you call your farm an herbal apothecary.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your training in getting to where you are?
Sure. Well, I want to say herbalism is a lifelong study. But I do have an associate's degree in Western Clinical Herbalism from Minneapolis Community College. I've studied anatomy and physiology from the U of M. And I've studied with a lot of local herbalists in the Twin Cities. And then also when herb conferences come around, I go and attend them. I've sat in with other herbalists when they're doing consultations. That's a good way to learn. It's just a learning process. And then the growing is a whole other aspect of it. The growing and plant medicine making is a whole other aspect.
So what attracted you to plants and their these kinds of qualities? I mean, how did that start?
Sure. Well, I grew up on a farm, a small farm in Indiana, and we spent all of our time outside. Well, we didn't hang indoors. When I was growing up, most of us, like the two of you, we were just outside.
Right.
So I was lucky. I had a lot of woods, meadows, a creek. I spent a lot of time playing in that. So I think it built a foundation, even though I couldn't articulate it, with the natural world. So it was just natural for me to grow up and feel connected to it. I also lived in the Ozark Mountains for a while, way back in the Ozark Mountains, 15 miles away from the mailbox, five miles away from electricity.
That had to be fun.
It was fantastic. It was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But I met a woman, Mamaw Calhoun, who was living back there, and she gifted me with my first book on herbs. And I was in a place that had been untouched, basically the wildness, so it was a great place to just start my own informal study with plants.
So that activity of gathering herbs in the wild is called wildcrafting?
Yes, wildcrafting, wild harvesting.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes.
So you're experienced in that as well. You know, it was interesting. A couple of weekends ago, I wasn't here in the station because I was at a conference, the largest organic farming conference in the United States, put on by an organization called the Midwest Organic Sustainable and Education Service. And so there were 3,600 people there. And I'll tell you, I in my mind, this particular event is going to be remembered as the Conference of Herbs. They had numbers of classes, and I guess they've always had numbers of classes, but they had a whole 6-hour course that I took in herbal medicine. And then I also went to the class on culinary herbs, and I went to the class, another short course on medicinal herbs. They were packed. They were just overflowing. In fact, I couldn't get into the culinary one because we were 5 deep outside the door.
I'll be
on both doors and inside every chair and every inch of floor space occupied. And I thought, you know, why does critical mass, you know, becomes an idea that I'm looking at these things and I'm saying, as you just said earlier, Nancy, mm-hmm. people are becoming more and more interested in what many cultures have known for 1,000
years.
That's
right. That's right. The plants have been around for millions and millions and millions of years. And for thousands and thousands of years, people have been using plants as a form of healing and staying well a lot longer than any trial study.
Yes. Yes.
And most of in our families, our great-great-great grandmothers and grandfathers, they had an apothecary. They had roots, bark, flowers, leaves, and they knew how to doctor their families. They'd do make poultices, liniments, teas. So it changed somewhere along the way. I think with the witch hunt and the Inquisition, things went underground, and when it resurfaced, the knowledge that we held, I don't know if there was a fear, but that knowledge is resurfacing.
It is.
It's really, which is beautiful.
It is, and I think people are. I think you touched on a really good thing, which is when some of these practices were demonized and they mm-hmm. went underground, mm-hmm. when they begin to resurface, people have to become brave again and reassert their courage to say, I think I'm going to take this back.
Yes, yes.
And I think I'm going to use it again. I recall growing up, and I grew up in the inner city, so it's like really a different mm-hmm. environment. But I grew up knowing and spending lots of time with my great-grandmother and my grandmother. And when we kids got sick, I mean, there were things that came out of the covers. I have no idea what it is that they did for me. But there was always the chicken soup, homemade. And
that's
at that
right.
time, the chickens were still not totally chemicalized.
Yeah.
And I recall my great-grandmother just kind of whipping up these things, you know, and putting things on a shelf and letting them steep and seep, and then I would get it.
That's wonderful.
And it's like, okay, that was normal. Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
And it worked. It worked.
And still some of those old folk remedies, gargling with salt water.
Yeah. Yes.
Or
yeah.
It's antibacterial.
Right, or a poultice of onions on the chest or ginger. It helps to pull out stagnation in the chest. And
yeah.
It makes so much sense.
It does. Now, some people may wonder, okay, how do you define an herb? And what's the difference between a culinary herb and mm-hmm. and something that you would use in a medicinal remedy?
Sure. Well, I want to say most culinary herbs have medicinal properties.
Yes.
They're not as strong overall, and they taste better. So we've learned to incorporate them in their food. Like thyme, the herb is very, very antiviral. So it's great. Just throw thyme in everything you eat during the winter. And makes a great tea also.
I use it a lot. Yeah.
So I think it's taste mostly that separates the two. And I shouldn't say the potency is weaker because it isn't necessarily.
Now, when some people think of herbs, they think of just the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
As you understand and practice and have known, of course, this discipline really well, what part of a plant do you use?
It really depends on the plant. Oh, so with a calendula? Mm-hmm. Which is a pot marigold, you use the flower, the mm-hmm. flower head. Some people use the leaves also. With the marshmallow plant, that's Althea officinalis, not marshmallow, but little children like to think that. You use the whole plant. Well, you use the root, you use the leaf, and you use the flowers. The stem I don't use on it. So it really depends on the plant.
Okay.
There is a thinking out there, you use the whole plant. But for me, in my training, it depends on the plant. And when you harvest it, depends on what time of the year when you harvest. Oh. The roots you want to harvest now or coming up soon because the energy has all died back and gone down to the root. And it's just hanging out there, just waiting to emerge. So as spring is coming, it's a good time to dig up some roots, which are good for the body. Some burdock, dandelion root, yellow dog.
I was just going to ask you about that burdock. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Burdock.
So here we
great
have a plant.
For
yeah, here
great
we have a plant that most farmers would like to have spent millions of dollars trying to eradicate.
Like nettles.
Yeah, like yeah. nettles. And my cows eat this stuff, you know. Oh. We have had one area where there was a lot of manure, composted manure over the years because the cows went in and out. So when burdock started to grow, it was like humongous. And you put the cows in there and it's gone. It is just gone.
Even the cows know it's good for you.
That's right.
So they probably have great livers and really good skin. Cows.
Another selling point. Yeah. So it's not just about the leaves. It's not necessary that there's this big line between culinary and medicinal, mm-hmm. because those two things are there. And when it comes to actually using a plant, mm-hmm. why is it that you feel that it is such a good idea to use this plant approach versus the single chemical shotgun, either injection or drug?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Herbs aren't meant to replace medications. Medications are life-saving for some people. Overall, I feel herbs are a lot safer. Instead of just masking the symptoms and numbing the pain, they can actually help facilitate the body, strengthen it, the healing process. I trust them more. Mm-hmm. It's a gentler approach.
Yeah.
It really works to get to the root of the problem. And I can give you an example. So we're coming into springtime. In the wintertime, we're a little more sedate. We don't move our bodies around as much. We eat more fat, which is typical for winter. We want to store more fat in our bodies. We're a little sluggish, so we're coming into springtime, and our liver really needs a cleanse. It needs a little help just to start digesting the fats again, and that in turn helps our digestive system. So when you come into springtime, you'd be looking at herbs to help strengthen the liver, to help support it, to help break down fats, and you'd be looking at bitters that help the digestive process, like dandelion greens, dandelion leaves, and this in turn strengthens the whole body, so that as you, people who have seasonal allergies, if you work with strengthening the liver and the digestive system, you're going to have less issues with allergies. So it's looking at the whole, mm-hmm. not just parting out.
You know, one of the things you just mentioned just kind of strikes a chord with me as well, or at least it strikes another question. Mm-hmm. So getting the liver moving again, putting ourselves into the springtime, summertime mode where we're more active. And you mentioned dandelion greens. Mm-hmm. Now, that is what would normally come up.
Yes, it comes up when we need it.
It comes up when we need it.
Yes.
Another one is fiddlehead ferns.
Isn't that beautiful?
And being able to work in harmony with the things that the seasons provide, mm-hmm. it seems to make kind of sense.
It does. It's a kind of reciprocal relationship we have with the plants. I mean, I think not only do we want to treat them with respect and recognize their intelligence, but if we use them in season also, they have gifts for each season for us.
You know, one of the things that does interest me when I take a look at some of the herbalism books, when I listen to some of these classes recently at the Organic Farmers Conference, was that when you take a look at an herb, it just doesn't have one flavor or one component in it. It's really complex. Mm-hmm. It may have a little bit of astringency. It may have a little mm-hmm. bit of sugar. It may have a quality in it that makes it kind of slippery, kind of mucilaginous. Mm-hmm. And so when you're ingesting or prescribing an herb, it's really got a balance, it seems, of many components mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that end up working together.
Yes. Yes.
Versus the other approach, which is in our society has been, let's distill out this one chemical mm-hmm. from this root, plant, whatever, and just use that. Mm-hmm. And you don't get those other kind of components that help actually the body use the thing that's coming into
right.
it.
I think that's trusting in the intelligence of the plants. And we're made up of a lot of things plants are made up of. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to do whole instead of just piecemeal, where I think pharmaceuticals have an approach of just addressing one. And like you were saying, maybe they... And with a plant, there's so many active plant constituents, and they all work together. Okay. Like you were mentioning before.
Yeah. Which makes the study, I would suspect, ongoing, as you said. Mm-hmm. And man, rigorous. So, I mean, has that been a hard thing to understand? Just, okay, I've got this plant, but it's got so many things in it. How can it be used? I mean, is that a challenge of an herbalist?
It is a challenge of an herbalist. A lot of times you will combine different plants together because you'll be looking at the whole body. This is another thing about Western clinical herbalism. You don't just look at one thing. You look at the whole picture. Diet is huge. You have to look at what a person eats. Mm. You can prescribe a lot of we don't prescribe. Okay. Herbalists don't prescribe, but you can recommend certain herbs. But if you have a funky diet, probably you're not going to heal the way that you hope to heal.
You know, that's very interesting because I think a challenge in our American society today is that we tend to look for silver bullets. Mm-hmm. So I've got a headache. I got a backache. Give me the thing right this minute that's going to clear it up, cure me, make me feel better within the next 10 minutes.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, that's what we tend to think. Mm-hmm. And when we don't get those kind of results, mm-hmm. we get really upset and we say, well, you know what? You don't know what you're doing. I'm going to go to the next doctor or the next person in an effort to find this instant
right.
response. Meanwhile, I'm smoking cigarettes. I'm drinking a lot, you know, and a lot of my diet consists of Cheetos. So you're absolutely right. And that kind of attitude goes into the physician's office mm-hmm. as well as into the herbalist consulting room. And so if we think about a phrase that gets repeated again and again, you know, make food your medicine and medicine your food. Mm-hmm. If we really believe that, then we would be looking at that diet a heck of a whole lot more.
That's true.
Because otherwise...
Food is medicine, you're right.
Otherwise, we're killing ourselves mm-hmm. all the time.
I want to say also, Harvard did a study in 2014, Harvard University, and they found out that... almost 130,000 people died from proper prescription medication that had been prescribed properly. And during that same year, zero people died from using herbs. So there is, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of complications with medications, even though they can be life-saving for people.
Well, one of the things that I find fascinating is whenever they do advertisements for drugs on television. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which
side effects are longer than it's good for.
I thought, you know, you can take this pill because you're feeling uneasy today and risk like liver cancer. I mean, this is...
I know, it's bizarre.
The side effects can be so, so catastrophic. So that's, but as you said, you know, Western, allopathic medicine, which is the conventional medicine that people understand with physicians and hospitals, has been life-saving, will continue to be life-saving. So do you have to make a choice between one and the other as you try to improve your wellness?
That's another good question. I think what would be great is to have, if you need medications, say you have diabetes, mm-hmm. or you have a really bad heart and you need something for blood pressure, you just can't get it down. If you're going to work with someone who's on a lot of medications, first of all, you really have to be responsible. You have to do contraindications to make sure there's not going to be any trouble combining the two. So I think there's definitely a place for both. My approach is always plants are less invasive. If you can just go with using plant remedies, I think it's gentler and more healing for the body, but there you can combine both of them. You just have to really be responsible and do checks for contraindications.
Yeah, kind of work with a good trained herbalist, I think.
Right, and also doctors should know how to wean people off of meds too. You can't just, a lot of meds you don't want to just cut back on. People get suicidal trying to cut back on some of their antidepressants. It depends. So you really have... They also need to be able to work with their doctors and pharmacists as well as their herbalist.
Right.
I have to say, I don't do as many herbal consultations as I used to. Mm-hmm. I'm more in the farming and plant medicine
yes.
making aspect of it. Now that's where my heart lies, is being out in the fields, out in the gardens with the plants. That's where it's most alive for me.
Now, so tell us a bit about your farm. Describe it for us.
Okay. Well, it's 5 acres, but I have about 1 acre in medicinal and culinary herbs. I don't grow one big garden, but I have 3 big ones. So I'll be adding another big one today. And I have a lot of small ones, but we put paths in the garden. So I really strive for beauty. When I think of herbs, I think of beauty. And then the way you place the herbs in the field, some plants, they really like a poor soil. They like it sandy. They like it dry. Plants next to each other, like yarrow and mint, they'll take over. They have no boundaries. So you plant them next to each other. They'll keep each other in check.
Oh, it's sort of like they're...
It's a kind of weird companion planting.
Right.
And then there's feverfew, which is an herb. I want to say this about feverfew. In Europe, it's the number one herb that doctors prescribe for migraine headaches. I wish doctors here knew about it. It's fantastic. Feverfew is sort of smelly. So a lot of the big pollinators won't be attracted to it. The ones that the butterflies, I should say the pollinators of bigger headed flowers like echinacea. So you don't want to plant feverfew next to echinacea because then it smells so bad, they're going to go to another plant. So you have to be careful what you plant next to each other. Mm. And out in the fields, it really engages the senses because the colors are so brilliant of the flowers. Mm. And there's a beekeeper who keeps 5 hives of bees on the land, so there's always a buzz, the sound. I've never once been stung harvesting. They don't care about me. We have this relationship. The taste, because you can just pick a flower, pick a leaf, and tell by looking and tasting it when it's ready to harvest. The touch, like the marshmallow I was talking about, the plant, it is so soft. It's like velvet. Yeah. I just want to pet it every time I go by it. Yeah. So it really engages your senses in a beautiful way.
So, I mean, you learned about the components. You are farming it now, you know, which is what you say is your passion. This is what you're involved in. And you have been a certified organic farm. You moved to New Acres, so that will be certified organic as well.
Right, yes.
And you are involved in the harvest and preparation of product. So tell us a bit about that aspect of it.
I do. I see it through from beginning to end, to the little baby seeds that germinate all the way to taking it to market. Harvesting, it depends whatever part you harvest, whether it's the leaves, the flowers, the roots. There are several different things I do with the plants. I make tinctures, a lot of tinctures. A tincture is actually using a menstruum of alcohol, glycerin, or vinegar. I mostly use alcohol. I write off a lot of alcohol on my taxes each year. I know it sounds funny. But what I'll do, I pick the fresh plant part for the most, and I'll fill a quart jar with the leaves or the flowers, and then I'll pour alcohol over it. And I'll cap that, I'll label it, and then I'll store it on a shelf with a curtain, and it gets shaken every day. And after what happens during that process, the alcohol pulls out the plant properties, all the plant constituents. And after a couple months, I'll strain it, I'll filter it, and I'll bottle it, and I'll label it. So that's tincture making. Tinctures last from 5 to 7 years. They're potent plant liquid and that you can mix and match depending on what body system you use. I also dry teas, and the drying process takes a little while to get that down because you want to not over dry and not under dry. I also make salves, so I'll make oils out of the plants, and then that'll get turned into salves.
Wow. So you actually, do you do an infusion with the oil, or do you distill? I mean, are you doing...
No, I don't have a distiller. That's a different thing. That's with essential oils. That takes a lot of plant product.
Yeah.
Like, this room could be filled from head to bottom with rose petals, and maybe you'd get 2 ounces of essential oil of roses, and it's very, very expensive. So I don't have that kind of land to grow that plants. So I do more of an infusion.
Okay.
That's what it is. For most plants, they need to be dried before you put them in oil. They'll go rancid because of the water content. St. John's wort oil is one that you don't need to do that with, and you leave it in the sun in a jar, and it's beautiful. With a matter of day, the oil turns bright red, and it's a little yellow flower. It looks like a little ballerina with a fancy little ballerina skirt on, but it has something called hypericum in it, and if you look really close, you can see these red dots, and that is what colors the oil, but it's brilliant, and it's a beautiful oil that's used for bruising, for trauma, for nerve pain.
Well, if people want to find out more, both about your farm and what you do and about your products, where can they go?
They can go to www.redcloveracademy.com. I also want to say, too, I provide CSA seasonal herbal shares. I just want to mention that.
You bet.
Because it's sort of a cool thing that's happening across the country. There's you can buy a share of organic vegetables, and you get a box of vegetables each week. With organic herbal shares, you don't need a box of herbal remedies every week. So it's seasonally, like there's one coming up for spring,
right.
And there's a summer one that goes out, and then a fall winter one. And that's really looking at what's going on with the body and the body systems that time of year, and you gear the herbal products towards that.
Right, and I've even got a list of what's in your spring herbal share.
You do? Great.
Yes, I do. Great. Yes, I do. In fact, why don't you kind of read some of that for
sure.
us?
Sure, okay. There is a, and we're looking at coming out of winter and being sluggish and just getting things moving. So there's a spring cling healthy liver support tincture, tasty digestive bitters. Bitters, the Europeans have been using bitters for a long time, a little aperitif before you have your meal. So
what does that do?
Well, it releases enzymes. It said food's coming down the hatch, and so by the time the food gets there, it's just really ready to digest it.
Ah.
That's a simple way to put it. And they usually taste well,
good.
Too. Okay. Then there's a springtime herbal tea blend. There's a lymph rejuvenating tonic tincture, getting the lymph moving. The lymph returns the cellular fluids to the blood, but also clears out a lot of waste in the body, so it cleans things up. And then there's the first aid herbal heal all salve,
which I use all the time.
Yeah.
Working on the farm. And it really, really works well.
It does work well. You're right. There's a lot of plants in there that's their gift.
Yeah.
In that remedy. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else there that people might be interested in?
Well, there also, you have an option to add on to your seasonal share. Each share I add, options that you just tack on if you want. And some of them are, they're dressings, allergies. Mm. So many people have seasonal allergies. So there's a seasonal herbal sinus support tincture, an herbal nasal spray support for sinuses, and there's a sinus support herbal tea.
Huh.
There's a whole list of things. People can find out if they go to
my website. They can go to your website, but do you go to any farmers markets?
Or I do.
Can they find
yes.
you elsewhere?
I'll be at the Kingfield Farmers Market in Minneapolis. I'll be there on Sundays. I'll be at the Linden Hills Farmers Market on Sundays. That's in Minneapolis. And I'm waiting to find out if I've gotten into the Northeast Farmers Market. And then I hope to have some Saturdays to be here at my hometown local Heritage Farmers Market in Amory, because it's nice to stay connected with the community in this way.
Right. So will you be trying anything new this year? Something that you haven't tried before?
Sure. I'm always trying new things. Let's see, what am I? I'm actually doing something. This is with essential oils. It's my own thing, Old Spice, only this is called New Old Spice. It's for men. Because my grandfather always smelled like Old Spice. And I found the remedy for it. And so the recipe for it. So I'm tweaking it. It's not so much, it's using more essential oils that someone else makes. So that's one fun thing I'm looking at. I'm looking at working with women who are going through the change of life and remedies more for assisting and supporting through that time.
Oh, I can understand that. There are a lot of us going through that, you know, the older, the baby boomers are aging and looking for numbers, I would think, of product that might help with skin care that's changing, you know, your skin changes, your hair changes, the way that you do or don't heal.
Right, that gets slowed down a bit, doesn't
it? Gets slowed down a bit as you get older. So I would hope that that's going to be a very good market for you. Well, Nancy, I want to thank you so much
for
being
Sylvia.
In studio.
It's been great to be here. Thank you, Bob.
Question. Oh, yes, absolutely.
I like listening to what you were saying, but I have to know. This isn't something I can go in a store and buy, is it?
Well, you can, right down the street, can I mention? Indigo Iris.
Really?
Has a lot of herbal remedies in there.
Okay.
You can, yes.
But how would I know what to buy?
That's a really good question.
That's
a lot of times people willy-nilly will go in and grab this and that.
Yeah.
It would help to maybe talk with someone beforehand.
Sure.
I'd be
someone
happy.
Like you.
Well, someone like me, yes.
All right.
Thank you, Bob.
You know, and I guess I'll just say, as we wrap things up, there are many places that sell herbs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always know where they come from.
That's right.
You don't know how old they are. And whether or not they were grown with chemicals, which
that's
is very often the
right.
case in foreign markets. And so when you can find a local source that you can depend on, like Red Clover, that's the kind of thing that you really want to go for.
Know your farmer.
Know your farmer. Thanks a lot, Nancy.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Okay, good
Thanks,
having you
Bob.
Here.
Visit my website, bronxtobarn.com,
to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.